are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday. Welcome to a new week of Timberwolves basketball. And boy, do they need a fresh week. Last week saw the Timberwolves go 2-2 overall with impressive wins at the start of the week against the Pistons and Spurs. But it was followed by blowout home losses to Washington and Houston on Friday and Saturday, respectively. This week, the Timberwolves will have a home-and-home series against the Utah Jazz early in the week and then host the Suns on Saturday night after a couple of off days. We'll get into the weekly schedule here a little bit later on. Today's episode, we're going to touch briefly on the weekend's losses. And let's be clear, I don't want to spend too much time on them myself because they were awful and terrible. And I don't think you want to listen to much discussion about them either. But we do have to talk about them because, well, it's the last two games the Wolves played, and this is the Locked On Wolves podcast, so we don't really have a choice. And also, it's going to give us important context for the upcoming week, obviously, and what we can expect to see in the three upcoming games. So we'll talk first about the two games on Friday and Saturday. I spend just a couple minutes on each one, and then I want to spend the middle segment talking about something that I wrote on, with Dunking with Wolves, which is the potential for a D'Angelo Russell trade. We've talked about it a little bit on this podcast dating back to the offseason. We spent a lot of time in August and early September after the Wolves missed out on Russell, but the rumors persisted. So continued injuries for Golden State combined with the Wolves, I guess, hot start until this weekend. But still at 7-6, they're maybe a little bit, they're certainly outpacing their Vegas win total projection of 35.5. And then the lack of dynamic offensive players for the Wolves outside of Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins mean that the Russell thing is kind of becoming a topic again. And I think it's an important thing to cover, and it's a realistic potential trade scenario, the most realistic major move that the Timberwolves are at least rumored to make. And we can certainly put together potential deals that work for both teams. So we'll spend a few minutes talking about that. And then finally, we're going to look ahead at the week's games against Utah and Phoenix discuss what to expect in the upcoming week. All right, first, let's talk Wolves-Wizards. The Timberwolves on Friday night faced off against the Wizards, who they beat by 22, I believe, back in Washington a couple weeks prior. It was the first game they didn't have Karl-Anthony Towns available, so they beat the Wizards easily without Towns on the road. This was expected to be a pretty easy win for the Wolves. They were looking to build their first three-game win streak and improve their record to, I guess it would have been 8-4, and things felt like they were going to go the Wolves' way to kick off the weekend. But unexpectedly, Andrew Wiggins was not available due to personal reasons on Friday, and so the Wolves were shorthanded against the Wizards. Overall, the story of the game on Friday was that Karl-Anthony Towns was fantastic on offense, was super efficient. The Wolves fell behind early. They were down by 9 after the first quarter, but had a really good second quarter, scored 43 points in that frame. And the Wizards, one of the league's worst two or three defensive teams overall, heading into the game. And so it made sense that the Wolves were able to gain some ground. They were only down by 3 at halftime. Things felt like they were stabilizing a little bit, but then they had an awful third quarter. After scoring 43 points in the second frame, the Wolves scored just 19 in the third quarter and ultimately trailed by 10 heading into the fourth quarter, and things turned into a blowout there fairly quickly in the final frame. The story of the game for the Wizards, sure, Bradley Beal had 44 points on 22 shots. He got to shoot 14 free throws in this one, and he pulled down 10 rebounds. He was so much better than he was the first time around when these two teams played. Beal was pretty terrible when the Wolves played in Washington, but Beal had another game over 40. He had his previous game was over 40. Scored 44 points. The Wolves struggled to guard him without Wiggins available, and Wiggins has legitimately been good on defense this year. Without Wiggins available, the Wolves just struggled to slow him down. Josh Okogie came off the bench and had a solid game. He had 12 points himself on 5 of 10 shooting, had 6 rebounds, and was okay on defense. Per usual, but Trevion Graham didn't have a great game. Jarrett Culver didn't have a great game. And all three of those guys just struggled to keep pace with Bradley Beal. The biggest surprise, and I guess the difference maker, because we knew Bradley Beal was going to have a ton of points in this one, was Mo Wagner, the big man off the bench for the Wizards. Wagner had what was clearly a career high, 30 points. On 13 of 15 shooting, he hit all four of his three-point attempts, pulled down 15 rebounds in just 25 minutes, and was a plus 18, which was the second best mark on the Wizards. There were a couple of Wagner and Towns back-and-forth moments, and really, Towns had the better of the matchup when they were head-to-head. Wagner did a lot of damage with Towns off the court, as the Wizards were doing their best to match up Thomas Bryant with Towns. Bryant got into a little bit of foul trouble early on, and that, I think, kind of lent itself to some extra Wagner minutes. The 13 of 15 shooting, I mean, the 4 of 4 three-pointers, that's hard to blame on Towns. I think the biggest issue for Towns in this one was the rebounding. Towns only pulled down 10 rebounds himself in 33 minutes, whereas Wagner got 15 rebounds in 25 minutes. There were a couple of instances, especially late in the game, where Towns was overcommitting to help defense, trying to get help side blocks and let some offensive rebounds bounce over to the Wizards. So that was frustrating and probably the biggest thing to be upset with Towns about. But whatever he allowed on offense himself, he was giving more back on offense. And again, the Wagner damage was rarely one-on-one against Towns. Towns did get a technical at one point for beating Wagner to the rim, and Wagner flopped, tried to draw a foul, didn't get it, and Towns caught the ball after it went through the net and set it on Wagner's chest and got a technical for it, which Jim Peterson accurately pointed out on the Wolves broadcast that Wagner's beneath Towns, and Towns didn't need to do that. Everybody knows he's better than Mo Wagner, but he allowed himself to get sucked into that just a little bit in this one. Towns did have 7 turnovers, which was frustrating, but a couple of those were flops on offensive fouls that were called by with Mo Wagner, you know, kind of baiting Towns and somehow getting the calls. So that was a little bit frustrating, but overall, Towns was easily the best player on the floor for the Wolves in this one, and it wasn't remotely close. He finished with a minus 3, which was easily the best mark on the team for players that played significant minutes. The Wolves really only had the only other impactful offensive player was Robert Covington, who had 20 points and 6 rebounds in 27 minutes. He was 4 of 6 from beyond the arc and scored his 20 points on just 9 shots overall. So you take out those two guys who combined to go 8 for 12 from beyond the arc. The Timberwolves were 3 of 25 for the game from beyond the arc if you take out Covington and Towns. Pretty terrible. It's a theme that we've seen quite a bit and we're going to continue to see. In the absence of Andrew Wiggins, two-way player Keelan Martin made his, I guess it was his season debut in this one, and he did score 6 points, was 3 of 9 on shooting the ball, but he was 0 for 6 from beyond the arc, and many of those attempts came with the game still in question early on. And disappointing outing from Keelan Martin, I guess, to say the least, but he wasn't the only one missing threes. Jake Layman was 0 for 3, Jeff Teague was 0 for 3, Travion Graham was 0 for 4, and the Wolves' three-point shooting and lack of rebounding dug themselves a big hole early in the fourth quarter. They weren't able to dig out, and it was just a frustrating all-around loss for the Wolves against a team that was 2-7 coming in. So it was a rough one. All right, moving on to Saturday. Just 24 hours later, the Wolves hosted the Houston Rockets. The Rockets had played at home on Friday night, so they were also on the second half of a back-to-back. They were also extremely shorthanded. Russell Westbrook sat out the game due to rest, and Clint Capella missed his second straight game due to concussion, or being in the concussion protocol, I guess you could say. And the Timberwolves were again without Andrew Wiggins due to personal reasons. He was questionable during the day. Ultimately, he didn't play. Then unexpectedly without Josh Okogie due to apparently a knee issue. So the Wolves had two guys unavailable on Saturday that they weren't expecting to have unavailable, but the Rockets themselves were pretty shorthanded. The bench, they relied a lot on some guys that you may or may not have heard of before. Isaiah Hartenstein, who is really good in the G League last year, was a second round pick a couple of years ago. He did a lot of damage off the bench. And then rookie Chris Clemens, who's undrafted out of Campbell, played a lot in this game for the Rockets and had himself a career night, scoring 19 points on 7-11 shooting, 5 of 9 from beyond the arc. Hartenstein in 31 minutes pulled down 16 rebounds. He only attempted two shots, but he did make four free throws. Both of those guys had huge plus-minus numbers. Campbell was a plus 32 and Hartenstein was a plus 26. Certainly not what you want to see if you're the Wolves, and they just utterly dominated the Timberwolves bench. There wasn't really a key theme to this one other than the Wolves had a chance to stick in this game throughout, but allow themselves to just get out shot, I guess, from beyond the arc. And there were some key moments in the second half. Well, the Wolves ended up ahead in the rebound battle. They allowed themselves to get outpaced on the glass late. And that was extremely frustrating. All right, we're going to get back into this game and talk about how it closed here in just a minute after this quick break. All right, the final couple notes on Wolves Rockets is basically James Harden was just launching shots all night long. He attempted 17 field goals in the first quarter, which it sounded like, based on the Fox Sports North broadcast, Wilt Chamberlain was the only guy who had attempted more field goals in a quarter. But Harden shot the ball 17 times in the first quarter, wasn't all that successful doing it. The Wolves did a great job on defense against him. Harden wasn't getting foul calls that he was looking for, and the Wolves were only down by 1 point heading out of the first quarter, although they led for much of the frame, so it was a little bit frustrating. Second quarter was a lot of the same. Wolves were only down by a bucket at halftime, although they led by six with like a minute and a half left in the second quarter, but a late run by the Rockets put them up by a bucket. I think it was 64 to 62 at halftime. The third quarter is when the Rockets really started to get some really solid minutes from Hartenstein. Clemens continued to shoot the ball well. Tyson Chandler struggled as the starting center in this one with Capella out. He only ended up playing 17 minutes, didn't really do much to slow down Towns. So the Rockets predictably went small. They played P.J. Tucker at center a lot in this one. P.J. Tucker and Hartenstein. Hartenstein got 31 minutes and did a good enough job guarding Towns. Towns had a good game, and he was much better on the glass than he was on Friday. He had 27 points, 15 rebounds. He was 3 of 6 from beyond the arc, 9 of 15 from the field. He did only attempt 6 free throws, but he made all of them. And again, he was a team best in the plus minus column with a minus 5. And the Wolves actually got really good games from Jake Lehman. He had his best game of the year, had 21 points, 5 rebounds, made 3 of his 4 3-point attempts. Covington had 17 and 5 with 3 assists, was a plus 11, which I guess was actually the team's best plus minus mark. I completely misread that a second ago when I said Towns was the best one, but Towns actually had the second best. And then that was really it. The rest of the team had a disappointing game. Lehman actually started for the first time this year. Jarrett Culver struggled again off the bench. He had some nice moments early, but ultimately was inefficient and struggled defensively. Nobody could really slow Harden down in this one, which wasn't a shock. And not having Okogie available due to left knee soreness was a big deal. Harden ultimately he attempted the most shots in a game for his career, a career high 41 field goal attempts in 39 minutes. So launching more than a shot a minute is, let's just say it's a lot. It's a lot of shooting. James Harden was 8 of 22 from beyond the arc. So, you know, pretty much his average in terms of success from deep. He was 9 of 11 from the free throw line. He still did have 6 assists and 5 rebounds. But without Westbrook in this game, it's like Harden not only reverted to the last year version of himself, but went even further and just didn't stop shooting the ball. Basically, when he was off the floor, Chris Clemens was the offense for the Rockets. Ultimately, for the game, they were 19 of 49 from beyond the arc, which is almost 39%. The Wolves were 12 of 38, which is 31.5%. So the three-point shooting, some of the timely rebounding in the second half, and then the sloppiness of the ball. The Wolves had 18 turnovers to the Rockets 11. Jeff Teague was the primary culprit with 5 turnovers. He did not have a very good game in this one. And the Wolves just fell behind. Headed into the fourth quarter, they were only down by 8, but things spiraled relatively quickly, and they ultimately lost by 20 not a great loss. Yeah, the Rockets are good. They're 10-3 now, and James Harden's really good. But without any other really solid NBA caliber starting players, I mean, PJ Tucker is fine. He's a good defender. Austin Rivers is much better than he used to be. Ben McLemore is essentially a 3-point shooter now, and that's it. But that's it. This team didn't have much depth, and it's not a game that the Wolves should have lost in the way that they lost it. All right, let's move on and talk a little bit about the potential for a D'Angelo Russell move. There really wasn't anything in particular that spurred this conversation for me once again, except for that Russell's now going to be out for at least a couple of weeks with a thumb injury. And it just felt like the time of year that, especially coming off these two big losses for the Wolves this weekend, disappointing losses. I want to be clear, the Timberwolves aren't going to overreact to a couple of bad games and suddenly make a move, and Russell is hurt. But it just underscores how bad the Warriors are. They're 2-12. They're the worst team in the league, and things are going to get worse before they get better with Russell sitting out. And Friday and Saturday's games really highlighted the Wolves' need for another dynamic offensive player. If either Towns or Wiggins is out, they don't have anybody that can consistently provide scoring punch on offense. You know, Robert Covington's a good three-point shooter and can definitely have big games. Jake Lehman had a great game on Saturday, but it was a season high, and that's not something we were going to expect to see out of him very often. Jeff Teague just didn't have a good game. For as good as he's been all season, he had a rough weekend. So all that to say, even with Wiggins on the floor, the Wolves need another dynamic offensive player if they want to be a playoff team. Unless Jeff Teague continues to play how he did, you know, for much of the season so far, and the Wolves might be able to squeak in, they might be a 500-ish team. But long term, if this team wants to become a contender, they need another option on offense, even if Towns is suddenly a star. So that brought up the Russell conversation again for me, and I think that it's an important conversation to continue to have. The possibility of the Wolves trading for Russell is entirely realistic if you look at what each team has on their roster and what each team is looking for. The reasons why the Timberwolves would be interested in Russell, we've talked about, you know, fairly ad nauseum here at the Locked On Wolves podcast, and no doubt you've heard it elsewhere as well. But the 2-12 Warriors, D'Angelo Russell's out for a couple weeks with a thumb sprain. So again, things are going to get worse before they get better, which I guess is more of a reason for the Warriors and the Wolves to make the move. But for the Wolves, I mean, Russell's an all-star point guard and obviously would make a deadly pick and roll duo with Towns. The two are best friends. We know this. There was the Slam magazine article where Towns, Russell, and Devin Booker with the Suns talked about how they want to play together someday. This would expedite that. Russell was going to come to the Timberwolves this summer until the Warriors' possibility presented itself. And the much talked about reason why he went to the Warriors was the weather in Golden State. But clearly I think he'd rather be on a 500 team with cold weather than the worst team in the league with Bay Area weather, if I had to guess, if he had to do things over. But Russell's window aligns with Towns perfectly in terms of where they're at in their careers. And you know, clearly the two want to play together. Their games would mesh. The only real concern in terms of fit would be defense. Russell's has been a pretty bad defender in his career thus far, but obviously has time to improve. And if the Wolves are playing Russell, Wiggins, Towns, and Wiggins is a solid defender, Towns is solid in the post, and then the Wolves are, say, most of the time they play a small ball lineup with a couple of other wings out there, this team could still be decent enough defensively and just utterly unstoppable on offense that it could be this year, if they were to acquire him in the next few weeks, the Timberwolves could still end up being a 40 to 45 win team by adding Russell to the fold sooner rather than later. Incentives for the Warriors, I mean, Curry's not going to play till probably close to the All-Star break. Klay Thompson's out for the season. The team's 2-12 now, and might not win a game with Russell out over the next couple of weeks. And in my opinion, I'm not sure that Russell Curry backcourt was the best fit anyways. And once Thompson comes back, it's just kind of a weird, I just don't think that those three guys as high usage players are going to fit super seamlessly together. So it makes sense for the Warriors to pick up assets. As long as they're bad this year and are going to get a high lottery pick, they may as well pick up additional assets to reload their roster quickly. The best thing the Wolves can offer the Warriors is a player who can help them as they compete. I mean, next year they're going to be contenders again with Curry and Thompson back in the fold, assuming Draymond Green is still there. Green's not having a good year, but his game is predicated on the players around him, on supporting the players around him defensively and just kind of fitting in on offense as a distributor. And that just hasn't happened this year with the injuries that they've had. But assuming, I mean, they will be a contender again next year. So adding a player like Robert Covington to the mix to, you know, Covington's got two more years at under $13 million in each of the next two seasons, which is a bargain for one of the league's best 3-and-D players. He's been okay so far this year, but he's still recovering from his knee surgery last year, and he's still, you know, still in the prime years. So those, the rest of this contract is still a steal for Robert Covington. And then the Wolves could offer at least one, if not two, first-round picks to get this deal done. If the Wolves end up with Russell and Towns and still are able to hang on to a second year wing and Josh Okogie, a rookie, and Jarrett Culver, they've got enough talent on the wing that they wouldn't necessarily need to hang on to those first round picks. They're not going to, if Wiggins is a star, they don't need to acquire another star. And if he's not, they can look at trading Wiggins in the offseason anyways and creating some cap space to sign one in free agency. So the Wolves won't need those picks to acquire another star. So I think they'd offer up to two first-round picks in a deal for Russell. And then to make the salaries match, you have to include either Jeff Teague or Gorgui Dieng. I think the Warriors would rather have Teague, who expires this summer, and they just would need a point guard after trading Russell. So at least Teague would be there, and maybe the Warriors could flip him if the deal got done sooner rather than later. The Warriors could trade him before the February deadline to a team that is contending this year and might want a point guard like Jeff Teague on an expiring deal. So that will work money-wise. Teague, Covington, two first-round picks, and then the Wolves would actually need to get a player back to balance things out from the Warriors. So that could be Glenn Robinson III. It could be it could be Jordan Poole, who's a rookie this year. I don't think the Warriors would be too excited to trade him already, but maybe those are probably the two guys that the Wolves would most strongly consider coming back from Golden State. So the Warriors are getting three things. They're shoring up their roster to contend next year, and really for the next 2 years, they're getting some more three-point shooting, a guy who can play the three or the four in Covington and play great defense. And then they're also getting first round, at least one, if not two first-round picks out of it. And then if they take on Teague, they get expiring salary this summer, and that puts them right back in position. They shed the Russell contract, and they can find somebody who's a better fit in a you know, a decent free agent class this summer to play alongside their superstars. They could find another glue guy, another couple of glue guys, or they could find yet another star. They're not going to struggle in free agency if they want to go out and add some players to the team. And they would essentially get a redo on that cap space this summer while picking up Covington and some first round picks in the process. So it still would make the Russell signing smart for the Warriors, because they would be gaining extra assets and again, getting a do-over on that cap space. I think this is actually a pretty attractive move for the Warriors. The only thing that we don't know is if there's other teams willing to offer more for D'Angelo Russell, and we just won't know that until, or I guess we probably won't know that period until trade talks are going down between Gerson Rosas and the Warriors. But believe that the Wolves are interested, believe that it's a doable thing, and that the Wolves have some things to offer that the Warriors want. I guess the one other thing to consider is the Warriors' likelihood of wanting to trade with a Western Conference opponent, who the Wolves would then automatically become a contender with two All-Stars and plus Andrew Wiggins. Would the Warriors really want to get into that, and the first round picks suddenly become less valuable if the Wolves are a much better team? So that's another thing to consider, and that's why I think we need to be cautious about other teams and what they might be able to offer for D'Angelo Russell. All that to say, though, I think it's an important possibility that's not going to go away anytime soon, and we should be aware that it remains something that could still go down this season. All right, we're going to briefly just talk about the rest of the week. First, I did want to mention our friends at MyBookie. Use your basketball knowledge to prove you have what it takes at MyBookie.ag, where they make it easy to play and even easier to get paid. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and MyBookie will match 50% of your first deposit. If you're listening on the go right now and you can't visit MyBookie right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at LockedOnPodcast.com/offers. That's LockedOnPodcast.com/offers, and you can see all of our offers right there in one spot. All right, I quickly wanted to cover the rest of the week in our final segment here, looking ahead. The Wolves have a home-and-home series against the Utah Jazz, which is the I feel like they've done this every year, at least the last few years, with Utah, where they'll play out there and then return back to Minnesota to play the Jazz at home. Game's a little less intriguing without Ricky Rubio on the Jazz anymore. Utah's been very good this year. They've been 8-4, which is maybe a little bit below expectations. They are 6-0 at home, though, and just recently beat the Bucks at home and the 76ers during their last homestand. So two really strong home wins. Their other home wins coming against the Thunder and Kings, less impressive, but also the Clippers. So they've beaten three likely home court advantage teams in the Clippers, 76ers, and Bucks at home this year. And while they're coming off of a bad loss at the Grizzlies, they only lost by a point, but they lost to the Grizzlies, which the Wolves, I guess, they know how that feels, and are now returning home to face the Wolves. So it's definitely a game that the Jazz are going to be favored in on Monday night. When especially not knowing if Andrew Wiggins and Josh Okogie are available. They're both listed as questionable for this game. Wiggins with his personal reasons and Okogie with his knee issue. The Jazz don't really have any injuries outside of guys that have already been hurt. So this is certainly a game that will be difficult for the Wolves to pull out. Although if they have Wiggins available, they've got a real shot to make it close. Donovan Mitchell's been awesome again so far this year, and the Wolves have really struggled to contain high usage guards. And so look for Mitchell to have a huge game, which again isn't a crazy prediction because he often does, but he's going to have the ball in his hands a ton. And the Jazz, Mike Conley is coming on much better of late after a rough start to the season as their new point guard. So this is going to be a tough game for the Wolves. However, when they come home and face the Jazz at home on Wednesday, just getting the Jazz away from Salt Lake City will give the Wolves a little bit more of a shot at this one. And also, I would expect, you know, Wiggins and Okogie would have a better shot at being available in this one. Perhaps even Shabazz Napier, who appears to still be listed as doubtful for Monday's game. You know, we're going on 3 weeks now with his injury, so maybe there's a better chance that he's back as we get later into the week. So a tough home and home there. And then the Wolves will be home for the Phoenix Suns on Saturday after getting two nights off, Thursday and Friday. And it's a game the Wolves will likely be favored in, although Phoenix has been very good so far this year. They're 7-4, so actually ahead of the Wolves in the standings, and they've been good enough on the road. Although they've just had, I mean, they've beaten teams at home. They beat the 76ers and Clippers at home themselves, and have been impressive even on the road, beating teams that that you would think that they'd otherwise struggle against. They only lost the Nuggets by one. They've had a home heavy schedule, which I think has skewed things so far. As we get into the Suns matchup later in the week, we'll spend some time on Friday previewing it. But the first part of the week is going to be a lot of Utah Jazz, to be sure. So we'll be back on Tuesday morning with a quick recap of Monday night's game and what some of those takeaways are. And then as we get later into the week, we'll do the same with the second Jazz game and the Suns, talk about any other news that comes up, hopefully no additional injury news for the Wolves, and spend some time talking through the rest of the week's schedule. All right, that's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.